The Lakers are not a true threat because Anthony Davis is inconsistent. It's because Anthony Davis, y'all. It's because AD. I'm going straight to the top. Just put the sack on the clock. I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the top. Yo, 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 what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Sports in a Real podcast. Mike Filman here. As always, I appreciate you guys joining me, listening, watching YouTube, wherever you are, whatever you're listening on. As always, thanks for the love, social media, and everything. It's been a couple weeks. It's so hard. This is an admission. It's so hard to watch games and put out content at the same time and hold down a full-time job, all right? Especially if you're trying to watch football, college football, NFL, NBA. Like, it's a lot. And trying to put out your thoughts, put your thoughts down on paper, on a computer, and then, you know, recording. And it's a lot, man. So shout out to those who are able to record and do all this stuff more often than I do. It's hard, man, trying to do all this and a full-time job. But I'm not complaining. I'm just saying how it is. But it's been a couple of weeks. A lot has gone on. I've had a lot on my mind. So let's get it right into it. Before I get into the pros, I wanted to circle back to college football and really just the topic of the Colorado Buffaloes, since everybody else has hopped off the bandwagon. Right? It's crazy how that works. Crazy how that works, right? They're winning 3-0, surprising everybody, you know. Deion's, you know, talking trash. His kids are talking trash, and everybody's up on the mountaintop with him, you know, and all over ESPN and Big Noon Saturday game is there, and, you know, Fox and everybody, you know, all the shows, it's all Deion all the time. And as a result, there's a lot of bandwagoners. And there's a lot of haters. They've lost quite a few since then. And nobody's talking about them anymore. Deion is still the same personality. He's still flashy. Right? But the talk of the town that they were a few weeks ago is gone. And what people have realized is that the Colorado Buffaloes really aren't that good of a team. They weren't that good of a team to begin the season. They won a couple of games somehow. They willed to victory. Maybe a couple of the teams they played really weren't that good to begin with. So they upset a couple cats. But everyone knew, everyone who wasn't a bandwagoner and just all up Deion's butt, we knew this was going to happen. Because the squad wasn't like that. The squad wasn't like that. All right? They got a couple nice pieces. But we knew the squad wasn't like that, despite the fact that, you know, they got a whole bunch from the transfer portal, and despite the fact that a lot of the people from last year's 1-11 team wasn't around anymore, we knew they weren't that good. They weren't ready to compete with the big boys. And frankly, they weren't ready to compete with the average boys either. Once the meat of the schedule got into place. So the recent loss to Oregon State, they had already got smacked by the Oregon Ducks, but Oregon State Beavers, it's like, you know, it is what it is at this point. So no one's really talking about the Buffaloes anymore. And that kind of sucks because I still feel like Deion can build something great over there. He's a master recruiter. I've said it before, right? He's the best to ever play his position. He'll be able to get some dudes. Like, if he was able to get Travis Hunter to Jackson State, he's going to get some dudes. And the kids like his style. They like the bravado, the trash talking, you know, the confidence, borderline cocky, maybe even cocky itself. The kids like that. So he's going to get the kids. He's going to stack up the chips. And by chips, I mean the players. And eventually the chips, the championships will come too. So I've already talked about like the style that he has, and he's going to you know, build, he's going to build them into like the Hurricanes of the 80s and early 90s. And I'm fully confident in that. But it's just crazy, as someone who's been observing the whole time, how it works. They build you up as long as you're winning, and then poof, you're gone. So yeah, so now the record is 4-5, 1-5 in a conference, and it's not looking good right now. And it wasn't supposed to look good right now first year. But people were so hyped talking about Shedeur was going to be a Heisman, and by the way, I knew he was going to be a Heisman, and by the way, Deion has to, and it's hard, right, to separate family and the game like that, but Deion's going to have to, when he's criticizing his team, he can't throw his team like his O-line under the bus like he did the other day. You can't throw your O-line under the bus and protect your son. Even if he is the best player on offense, you just can't do that. All right? It's like all or nothing. That to me creates a bad locker room environment. And by the way, it's not all on their O-line. Yeah, they can use some size and some girth, right? Some meat and potatoes boys, some corn huskers for show. Some down south boys, some country dudes. Riding the 4x4s in the mud. They can use some of those boys on the offensive line, but, and I'm going to say this, Shedeur gets some of the blame for what happens with their offense. For those of you who watch the Colorado, who are still watching Colorado games, from the very beginning, I've thought that Shedeur took a lot of sacks. And yeah, he's not as fast as his dad, obviously, but he holds the ball entirely too long. Sometimes the play is dead, man. All right? Let it go. The play is dead. Some of the dudes in the pros suffer from that too in the NFL. But sometimes the play is dead. Let it go. Throw the ball away. So a lot of the sacks that they take is Shedeur just holding the ball. He's trying to make a play. Let the ball go. Live to fight another down. So instead of 2nd and 10, it's like 2nd and 16 because he's running around back there. And people had him slated to be like, you know, first round pick, franchise QB type of stuff off the first couple of games. I don't know, man. I didn't believe it when I was watching it at first. I didn't think he was doing, and again, I'm going to sound like a hater. I didn't think he was doing anything so spectacular. But he was getting a lot of hype because he was playing, you know, for his dad. The Buffaloes were winning, this and that. And he was making some nice throws now. His downfield passing was on point, no doubt. But NFL, elite NFL play is more than just deep passes. So I don't know if Shedeur is ready to be a franchise quarterback. Now, he's definitely draft material. I'm not saying that. 2nd, 3rd rounder, no doubt. But to say that this guy's ready to come in right now and lead an NFL team, I don't know. We kind of hyped him there. So, yeah, the Buffs have come down to earth. The media following, the cult following, for the most part, is gone. It's going to be interesting to see who's still riding for Deion. But yeah, a lot of cats fell off the bandwagon because it's not so hot anymore. It's not popular to be at the game rubbing shoulders with The Rock anymore. It's not as popular. That's a life lesson. This is sports and the real shit. It's a life lesson. A lot of cats are going to be riding with you when you're riding high. But what happens when you lose a couple? Right? When you surprise a couple people, there's going to be a lot of people in the picture. But what happens when you get upset or when you reverse back to the mean, back to the norm, what people expected? Back in the gutter, who's sticking with you then? That's a life lesson. It's a lot of people on the way up. That's going to be supporting you, patting you on the back. Offset's going to be on the sidelines. Yeah. But who won't be on the sidelines when you're losing? Life lesson. Everything else, man, I mean, it's chalk. College football is great, right? But the storylines just aren't there anymore, right? There is nobody who's super dominant, right? The Alabama of old, who was just running through everybody, like nobody stood a chance, and everybody hated them because they were so great. We wanted them to lose, man. Like, who's gonna beat Nick Saban? We don't have that team. The biggest story right now is Michigan. And I want to do a separate episode on Michigan and the cheating and all that. That's some scandalous stuff. But I don't think it's as scandalous as the NCAA. Yeah. But I'll save that for another episode. But there's there's nobody to fully cheer against, right? My Noles are still undefeated, so I'm still happy, right? I still got something to root for. Michigan got a good squad. UGA got a good squad. Bama's rebounded. But nobody's really got that squad that you're like, damn, these dudes are going to win the chip, and everybody's going to root against them to get beat to watch the upset. Ohio State's good. So the season is like really, really good teams, but there's not that one dominant team that's driving all the storylines and, you know, driving all the eyeballs to go watch. But I'm going to say this. My Noles are doing good. I think we're the most balanced team in the nation. We can throw. We can run. And I know there's bias all around in these polls and everything. They better not keep us out of the top four if we stay undefeated. We better be in a national championship run. All right. So let's move on to the NFL. NFL is kind of the same storyline. I've been saying this all year. Kind of the same storyline as college. And maybe that's a good thing, right? Parity. It's not one dominant team that you're like, oh, yeah, these dudes are going to win it. So it's some really good teams in the NFL. To me, the best teams are the Ravens. They're 7-2. But they lost to the Colts, and they lost to the Steelers. And the Steelers surprisingly have a really good record. Although, I don't think anybody who watches them think they're that good and they're really a contender. They're like the most mid good record team you can have. So the Ravens are good. The Chiefs are good still, I guess, right? They still got Mahomes and Kelce and Andy Reid. But their offense, honestly, is nothing scary. The Chiefs' offense is okay. I guess at any point, you know, Patrick Mahomes, you trust him to get things done, but the Chiefs are okay to me. 7-2. They lost to the Broncos a couple weeks ago. Lions first week of the season. Their offense is suspect. And their defense has kept them in a lot of games. And so they're a good team. Right? The Chiefs are a good team. But they're I wouldn't say they're unbeatable. Right? Previous Chiefs teams with the Cheetah and them boys, those teams were like, oh yeah, for sure. And it's not that I'm saying they can't win again. They clearly won last year without Cheetah. But they just don't look the same, man. And I got Mahomes starting my fantasy team. And some weeks, a couple weeks ago, he carried me. And last week, I took a L because he didn't carry me. Right? And that's how they've been, both in fantasy and in real life. Philadelphia, they're still not the team that we saw last year. And maybe because their schedule is better, they're playing, you know, better teams because they're playing a first place schedule this year. But the Eagles, man, at 8-1, they're okay. That's all I can say about them. I don't think they're great. I don't think they're dominant. Their defense is suspect. It's not the same as last year. They lost to the Jets a couple weeks ago. I don't know if Jalen Hurts is as good as advertised, right? He makes plays, but on a scale of Patrick Mahomes to mid, honestly, man, if I'm being honest, Jalen Hurts is probably closer to mid than people think, all right? He has a great line, so he's hardly ever pressured, and he has pretty good escapability, but he's not consistently under pressure like other dudes with bad O-lines. So, yeah, again, I'm going to sound like a hater. But Jalen Hurts and the Eagles, they're okay. So they're the best team, right? They're the best team in the NFC. They're the best team in the NFC. They just beat the Cowboys. But, yeah, that's all I can say about that. They're just a good team, but their defense is not as good as well last year. And I think the really good teams can beat them. They probably should have lost to the Cowboys. Some calls went the other way. They probably take a L, right? It sounds like sour grapes, but that's just the truth of the matter, right? And I thought Dak played pretty well that game, actually. The Cowboys could have won. So, again, NFL, just like college football, no real major storylines. Except for this for me, man. I'm a Miami Dolphins fan. I hate the New York Jets. I think Robert Saleh should be coach of the year. If the Jets end the season anywhere around 500, 8-9, 9-8, Robert Saleh's got to be coach of the year, man. Because watching them play, it's like, how the hell are they even, do they even have the record they have? How are they doing this? Like, sometimes you watch their offense. This is not even like a college offense. This is like a bad high school offense, man. It is hurtful to watch. It's painful. And as a Dolphins fan, I've seen some painful offenses, but nothing as painful as this. It is painful watching the Jets offense, but yet somehow they're hovering around 500. And if they end anywhere near 500 at the end of the season, 9-8, 8-7. Give Robert Saleh coach of the year, man, because they're averaging like 18 points a game, and it seems like it's even less. It seems like they're averaging like 11 points a game. It's ridiculous. Their defense is really, really, really carrying the load. And occasionally the offense comes through and does something. But after Aaron Rodgers went down, they clearly had all their eggs in that basket. And after he went down, everybody counted them out. So if they somehow managed to be around 500 at the end of the year, give the damn coach of the year to Robert Saleh, man. Because it is miserable watching that offense. And y'all know me. I'm not a big, quarterback, a franchise quarterback would do this and do that. And, you know, I support the so-called mid quarterbacks. Y'all know where I stand on that. But this cat, Zach Wilson, man. I'm not going to say what I want to say. But Zach Wilson is just not a good QB. He's not. And it's clear he was overdrafted. He was overvalued. That's when everybody was trying to draft someone who looked like, who had a play style like Patrick Mahomes, running around and strong arm, this and that, off platform throws. And Zach Wilson is just not a good quarterback. And I don't like bagging on people, but it is what it is. He shouldn't be a starter. And as a result, the Jets aren't going to likely, they're not going to make the playoffs, right? They're not really a threat to win a Super Bowl. And simply because, you know, they don't even have a mid quarterback on their team. If they had an okay quarterback, this team would be like a real threat, a legit threat to win the Super Bowl. But unfortunately, they're kind of stuck with Zach Wilson. 18 points a game, man, and they have this record. That's crazy. I mean, these guys beat the Eagles. They really clamped the Eagles. So shout out to Robert Saleh for the job he's doing, man. That's amazing. Amazing, amazing coaching job. Like people say, people are all about this thing now, and I hate it. I hate this conversation, right? People are like, oh, man, you know, you got to have an offensive head coach to win now, you know. No, you don't. Harbaugh, John Harbaugh with the Ravens was a special teams coach. Mike Vrabel with the Titans won that division, what, 3 straight years or whatever it was? Defensive-minded coach. Like, as long as you build a good team, defense gets stops, offense scores points, you don't need this fancy guru head coach. Because these fancy guru offensive head coaches, they have limits too. As proven by my Miami Dolphins. And I'll get into this later. But the Dolphins are a finesse team. As a Dolphins fan, I'm going to admit that we can score a lot of points. We beat the bad teams. We run up the score. But when we play tough physical teams, we look different. To me, that suggests we're not a tough team. Okay? We are not a tough team. We are a finesse team. And these offensive guru coaches usually build offensive teams that are very finesse. But when they face tough teams, they struggle. So it's not about having an offensive coach and this and that. It's about having the right coach who builds the right mentality and gets everybody in the locker room to buy in a game that's physical where guys have to play hurt. And Robert Saleh has done that, man. He's gotten buy-in from his locker room despite the fact that it'll be easy for these dudes to give in with the offense not looking like an NFL offense. Being able every week to get this defense to buy in, to play hard as hell, to go out there and knock dudes' heads off, like, that takes a special head coach. Knowing that your offense ain't going to score nothing but 11 points, barely, that takes a special coach to get the team galvanized and ready and pumped up to play on Sundays and Monday nights. That's crazy, man. So, yeah, Robert Saleh deserves to be coach of the year, even if they don't have a winning record. At 8-9, he deserves it all, man. Because not many coaches, offensive head coach, defensive head coach, would be in the position that the Jets are in right now, like, without a coach who's able to get the team, hey, man, we know what we got to do every week, week in and week out. They essentially got to limit teams to, like, no more than 2 touchdowns a game, if that, if they want to have a chance to win. So, yeah, New York Jets, you got a good coach, man. He may not be an offensive head coach, offensive guru, right? He's not going to design fancy plays like Mike McDaniel of the Miami Dolphins. That's fine. But he's a damn good coach, man. And the Jets should be lucky, feel lucky, to have Robert Saleh as a head coach. And I feel terrible giving props to a New York Jets coach, player, but it's the damn truth. What I see on my TV screen makes me want to throw up from their offense. But somehow, some way, they've beaten some teams. And they're always, always in the game. And that's credit to who their head coach is. As a leader of men, able to get these dudes to buy in, even though they know good and damn well their offense ain't going to give them no chance. They can't relax one bit. So, yeah, shout out to Robert Saleh. All right. Next point on NFL, and then I'm a jump to the NBA. We are too quick to crown NFL quarterbacks. We are so quick to crown dudes as the next it, the franchise, elite, right? Couple games. You if you're a rookie, you put a couple games together. You know, you make a couple off-platform throws. You show you got a rocket arm. Or you are it. You're ready to go in a can. You're that guy. You're the franchise guy. You're elite. And conversely, we're so quick to dump on dudes, right? You're in a rookie. You walk into a bad situation. We're quick to say, hey, man, you ain't like, you suck. You should have been drafted, you know, first overall, fourth overall, fifth overall. You suck. You're mid. You're never going to win a championship. And I know it's the media. It's the world we live in now where everything has to happen immediately, right? We want immediate results. QB gets drafted, he has to show us right away that he's great, that he can throw for 300, 400 yards a game. Or else, he's a bust. So this is what we've done with CJ Stroud and Bryce Young. CJ Stroud is pew, and Bryce Young is pew, pew, is a bust. CJ Stroud is great. Bryce Young is not good. That's pretty much what it is right now. And I hate that. I hate it with a passion because it's clear these guys have walked into two totally different situations. It's clear that CJ Stroud has a much better supporting cast than Bryce Young. Others have pointed it out, right? Kurt Warner talks about how CJ Stroud's offensive line has given him mucho time, all kinds of time to make his reads and throw passes. Whereas Bryce Young is running for his life. He lacks weapons. And I'm not saying CJ Stroud isn't good. I like CJ Stroud. The kid's a stud. But to sit here and pass judgment on him or Bryce Young so early is foolish to me. Because it's clear they're in two totally different situations. But dudes are now saying Bryce Young shouldn't have been the first pick when for like 2 years straight, all we heard was that Bryce Young could have been the first pick in the draft the year he didn't come out and the year he came out. Like even before Bryce Young was eligible to come out, people was like, this guy would have been the number one pick. All of a sudden, people acting like he forgot how to play QB. No, maybe because his environment is not the greatest, he doesn't look as good. And I'm not saying Bryce Young is going to be a Hall of Famer if you put talent around him. What I'm saying is you can't fairly judge Bryce Young right now. Simply because CJ Stroud is going off and throwing for almost 500 yards, we're saying, oh, Bryce Young is never going to be good. You don't know. We don't know. He still has a talent. He didn't forget how to play football. Of course, it's possible that even with talent around him, it's just not, we don't get the Alabama Bryce Young. I doubt it. I truly doubt it. He didn't forget, especially in this day and age where the offense is catered to, you know, quarterbacks. Football is catered to the quarterbacks. And a guy coming out from Alabama and the style of ball he played, this dude's ready to play pro ball. He's still smart. He can still see the field. My only concern with him was he was so small about taking hits. But he's still accurate. So people dumping on this guy, people dumping on Bryce Young, like this guy's all of a sudden a scrub. He shouldn't have been picked first because CJ Stroud is going off when really situations matter. And it reminds me of Justin Herbert and Tua conversation. 4 years ago, it was. Same damn thing. Same exact thing, yo. Same exact thing. Tua gets drafted to the Dolphins with Brian Flores. Oh, Tua, you know, Tua sucks. For 2 years, Tua sucks. That's what we heard. And Justin Herbert was elite. On his way to the Hall of Fame. Meanwhile, Justin Herbert walked into Mike Williams, who caught everything. Right? A much better offense, offensive coordinator, like offensive system, like all of that. All of that was lined up for him to ball out. And Tua walked into, I don't know, Devontae Parker and all these guys. These guys at Dolphins, the Dolphins were rolling out post-tank. That team was awful. And I'm not going to sit here to be one of the Dolphins fans who say Brian Flores was a bad coach. Brian Flores was a defensive coach, and maybe he had some personality traits that rub people the wrong way, right? He's from the Belichick tree, and these guys all seem to have the same kind of personality, right? But I don't know if I would call him a bad coach. Our defense was great under him. Unfortunately, our offense sucked. So Tua looked awful. And people were saying Tua was a bust. And Justin Herbert was it. Justin Herbert was going straight to the Hall of Fame from the very beginning because as soon as he walked into the league, he was throwing off his back foot, off platform, got a laser arm, this and that. Throwing 80-yard touchdowns down the field, bombs over Baghdad. Justin. That's all we heard. Justin Herbert this, Justin Herbert that. Meanwhile, everybody was dumping on Tua, man. Everybody those first 2 years. Everybody, even people who thought Tua was going to be good initially, turned on him. A lot of people were praising Tua pre-draft at Alabama, saying he was the next it, this and that. Dumped on him after he got drafted by the Dolphins those first 2 years because the environment he was in wasn't good. And we're doing the same damn thing to Bryce Young and CJ. And again, I like CJ, man. I want the brother to succeed. But you can't sit here and tell me after half a year watching Bryce Young and what he's put in and what CJ, environment CJ's put in, are equivalent. It's not. So the media is going crazy praising CJ, which they should. While at the same time, people are ready to bag on Bryce saying, oh man, Carolina made a mistake. When before that, most people had Bryce Young as the number one overall pick for 2 years. For 2 years, most draft analysts had Bryce Young as the number one overall pick. All of a sudden, they're all acting like he can't play. No, his environment isn't conducive to him looking like CJ. That's what it is. But in this microwave society that we're in, even as sports fans, like, you got to do it immediately, man. You got to ball out right now or else you suck. You're a bust. And if you suck for too long, then, right, when you become mid, when you become a veteran, and if you happen to become good later on, then you're going to be labeled mid and that you're getting carried by the team around you. Everything around you has to be perfect. When really, the truth is that everyone has to have good players around them to look good. But if you do it too late, you're going to be mid. If you do it early, you're going to be elite. So people are calling Justin Herbert elite, even though Justin Herbert has a 28-28 career record. That is as mid as you get. Well, 29-28 now, I guess. As middle as you get. But he's not going to get that label because people saw early on he was able to show his talent. You know how good it is to walk into Keenan Allen and Mike Williams? Justin Herbert walks into Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, and yes, he put up numbers. Would he have put up those numbers walking into Devontae Parker and whoever else, Lynn Bowden? I'm trying to think whoever else the Miami Dolphins was rolling out then. No. Would CJ Stroud be putting the same numbers if he wasn't protected and had the same weapons that Bryce Young has? Probably not. So please, man, like, we are too quick to crown dudes. We're too quick to dump on dudes. Like, let's give these guys a chance, man. Like, I don't think Justin Herbert's an elite quarterback. And this is an aside, okay? I don't think Justin Herbert's an elite quarterback because, to me, we crowned him too soon. Elite quarterbacks have to win big, tough games repetitively. They don't have to win every tough game, but they have to show a pattern of being able to will their team to tough victories. And I don't know if Justin Herbert has shown that. He puts up stats. He throws crazy passes. But being an elite quarterback is more than just crazy passes off your back foot, running, you know, cross body, putting up 4,000 or 5,000 yard seasons. Elite quarterback is more than that, than fantasy points. You got to win some games, some tough games, man. And so far, Justin hasn't done that. And if I'm being honest, I try to be honest here, my quarterback, Tua, who now has the elite label after being called a bust, I don't know if Tua is elite either. Like, we're so quick to crown dudes as elite that maybe they're not. Maybe there needs to be a separate category of guys who can throw for a lot of yards, who throw pretty passes. But when it comes down to it, like, you got to win some games, some tough games, man. Like, Tua, again, I'm a Dolphins fan. Tua doesn't have a signature victory yet against a tough team in 2 years with Mike McDaniel. That offense, when they play a tough team, a tough defense, that offense looked mid as hell. Tua looks mid as hell. That's the honest truth as a Dolphins fan. So I don't know if I can call Tua elite, just like I don't know if I can call Justin Herbert elite, just because they put up a lot of stats and they throw pretty passes. At some point, as a quarterback, to be called elite, you have to win some games, man, some tough games, not just scoring 70 points on the Broncos. Like some tough games that maybe we didn't expect you to win. Maybe you're outmatched. Maybe your offensive line is not blocking like they should. Maybe your defense is giving up more points than they usually do. Maybe a couple of cats are hurt. Whatever it is, right, you're going to have to win some tough games. And then we're like, okay, on top of these pretty stats you're putting up, on top of these crazy throws that you can make, you can also win some tough games, man. That, to me, is a sign of an elite quarterback. That's why I don't have no problem calling Pat elite. Because Mahomes has shown, even when the odds are stacked against him, yeah, his numbers may dip when he doesn't have Cheetah anymore. Yeah, it doesn't look as good when Kelsey's not in the game. But you could count on Pat to pull out one for you, right? Even when things aren't going great. That's an elite quarterback. Tough situations they're able to overcome somehow, some way. And no, Pat is not winning every game. And no, he's not winning every Super Bowl. But that's not the point. The point is to display a consistency, a pattern of, okay, you might get me this game, but I'm going to get you the next one. Like, I'm not just going to lay down because I'm missing a couple cats or we're against a pretty good opposition, a strong defensive front. And that's a long-winded way to say I'm not a fan of the elite label. I feel like there needs to be multiple categories because a lot of cats we call elite really aren't. I'm going to throw Jalen Hurts in there. There's plenty of other ones. Shoot. Doing up in Buffalo, Josh Allen. To me, there is guys who make fancy throws who look pretty doing it. And then there is guys who look pretty doing it, makes fancy throws, and wins some tough games. There's a difference between the two. So we need a different category. Maybe there's elite. Maybe there's just good, fancy quarterbacks. I don't know. There's good quarterbacks, mid quarterbacks, bad quarterbacks. So a lot of the cats we're calling elite, they're really not. They just do fancy things. They make off-platform throws. They run around, right? Especially now when all of the young guys coming in, they're going to be able to make off-platform throws. Most of them aren't going to be statues anymore. They're going to be able to run around and do some crazy things. But just because you can do that don't mean you're elite. Like at some point, elite means you're doing some stuff that wins games. Wins games against tough situations, against tough opponents. And so far, as a Dolphins fan, I haven't seen Tua do it. I haven't seen Justin Herbert do it. A lot of cats who haven't done it, but we've labeled them elite. That was a long aside, a long parenthesis. But I had to get that off my chest. So, yeah, back to the point. C.J. Stroud, great. Bryce Young, I still think he could be great. But we're judging him so fast, we're not giving him a chance to show what he can do. He's in a tough situation. So to me, Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud is the same conversation as Tua, Justin Herbert from a couple years ago. Same exact thing. And as soon as Bryce Young gets some stuff around him and he looks good, we're going to change. Narrative's going to change. So crazy. Give the man a chance. That's all I'm asking. Give the dude a chance. All right, switching gears. NBA. NBA has been looking good, y'all. I can't front. NBA has been looking awesome. The homies have heard me about the fact that they need to compete, man. Compete. Right? Act like you're getting paid a lot of money to play basketball. Don't let the homies at the LA Fitness look like they're playing harder than you. And so far, NBA has shown up, man. The young guys have competed for sure. The Celtics look good. Drew Holiday is a great fit for that team, man. I knew he'd be good, but you know, he's been a great fit for that team. and KP as well, Porzingis. But Jrue Holiday is like, it's just what they need, a stabilizer. He D's up, smart. Sky's the limit. The Bucks look good, but their defense isn't as good. And from what I'm reading, and it's true, not that after I read it, I paid attention to it, they're changing their defensive scheme, right? With Bud, they were pretty much forcing people into the paint, right? So they weren't shooting threes, or they were allowing people to drive to get into the paint. Whereas now they're not letting people drive as much. So they've kind of inverted their defensive scheme. I hope I'm making sense with that. So before, they kind of invited you to drive. Now they're not letting you drive, if that makes sense. So they're trying not to let you drive, I should say. So now they're letting you shoot more threes, right? Before, they was like, nah, we're not going to let you shoot threes. We're going to make you drive. Now it's the other way around. We're going to allow you to shoot threes, but we're going to close off the paint. I think that's how it's working. I may have that backwards. Forgive me, y'all. It's a lot up here. No, but seriously, I think that's how it is. So anyway, they've inverted their defensive scheme, and as a result, they're struggling. Plus, like we knew, Dame is not the greatest defender. So we'll see how it plays out over the season. I'm not panicking yet, but it doesn't look good from a defensive standpoint watching them play. All right? I'll admit that. Their offense is good, but defensively they struggle. Against the best teams, it doesn't look as good. So we'll see where that goes. The Nuggets look great. Right now, nobody has an answer for them. Nobody has an answer for them. Nobody has an answer for the Joker. It's crazy how we spent years trying to get everybody to shoot threes, be like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, and then boom, here comes this fat guy from overseas, right? Looks out of shape, looks out of breath, and he's freaking unstoppable. So the Nuggets are unstoppable right now. Nobody can really mess with them when they're playing for real. And the Joker looks legit, or is legit. It's still legit, right? Unstoppable. But that's not who I really want to talk about, y'all. Here's what I'm going to say. The Los Angeles Lakers are not a threat to win the NBA championship. All right? The sooner you digest that and accept that, the better off you'll be the rest of the season, all right? The better off you'll feel at the end of the season when they get eliminated, right, second round of the playoffs. It is what it is. The Lakers are not true contenders. They're not a real threat to win a championship, okay? First of all, it's not because, you know, I'm a Laker hater or whatever, right? No, the Lakers just... LeBron is too old. For this particular team, LeBron is too old. If this was 6-7 years ago, LeBron, I would say for sure they're a contender for the title. Unfortunately, with this version of LeBron, although he's putting up great stats, he's not backpack LeBron. LeBron can't backpack his team. And of course, being the Lakers, just like the Dallas Cowboys, everything they do is magnified. So all the players they brought in, everybody thought these guys were going to be superstars because they joined the Lakers, right? They get overhyped. We overhyped acquisitions for the Lakers. Yeah. But really, they're just okay guys. They're just role players. But they're in the spotlight. But the reason they won't win, they're not a true challenger, man. The reason the Lakers are not a true challenger is not just because LeBron is too old. And the guy's ridiculous at 38 years old, about to be 39, putting up the numbers and doing what he does. It's amazing, bro. Shout out to Bron. It's like, seriously, shout out LeBron for being in such great shape at this age. So many miles on his body. I don't know how he does it. No one else has ever done it like that, sustained it for that long. He wins the longevity award. But it's not just because Bron is old, man. It's because Anthony Davis, y'all. It's because AD. The Lakers are not a true threat because Anthony Davis is inconsistent. And I know people talk about he gets hurt, call him street clothes, Charles Barkley. That's fine, but I'm not even going to go there. Anthony Davis is not consistent enough, meaning you can't count on AD to give you four games in a seven-game series against the Joker to give you four games of, like, straight balls to the wall, ball out. You can't. 25, 15, 30, 30, and 12. You can't count on that in a seven-game series. He's too wishy-washy. All right? So as much as he's averaging 24 and 13 right now, which is really, really good, all-star numbers, when you play the best of the best in the playoffs, you're going to need that and more, and you're going to need that every day, seven-game series, plus defense. And he's playing great defense right now. But that first game, was it the first game of the year against Denver to score 0 points in a half or whatever it was, in a quarter? That, to me, says it all, and it's nothing new, right? You cannot count on AD to consistently go crazy, ball out, go all out. So it's not that LeBron is old. It's not that they don't have the talent, even though the talent is good, right? It's overrated, but it's good. Gabe Vincent, Christian Wood, right? Austin Reeves is a baller. But they're not a true threat because the guy who should be number one is not acting like a number one. Like, LeBron is ready to pass the baton to AD, but AD is not fully ready to receive that baton. He could put up some numbers, but he's not ready to fully take on the role. This is my squad. We're going as I go, and I'm going to take y'all. I'm going to backpack y'all. AD is still looking for Bron to backpack, and at this age, 38 years old, LeBron can't backpack anymore, man. This ain't 2015, 2016 Cavs. He can't. The man is human. He's not a freaking robot. He can't backpack no more. He can still score points. As a number two, he's amazing, but he can't for a seven-game series be backpack Miami Bron. He can't. Cleveland Bron taking bad teams to the finals. So AD's not consistent enough for me to say, okay, he's going to carry this team in a seven-game series against the Joker. And it sucks because he has all the talent. It's a sad thing knowing that you're watching a guy with all the talent to not maximize his talent. I've talked about this. A guy with a talent like AD should be in the conversation with the Joker, with Giannis, with Embiid as the best bigs in the game. Like, he should be up there. But every time we talk about AD, it's but, if. There should be no qualifiers, bro. Offensive package is there. He can step out, post up. Like, offensive packages. Defensively, he's a menace. So when we talk about the best fours, the best big men, there should be no question AD should be up there in that conversation. But he's never up there because he doesn't maximize a talent. And it's the saddest thing to see. And for those of you who watched the movie, A Bronx Tale, Robert De Niro. If you watch the movie, A Bronx Tale with Robert De Niro, one of the most famous lines of that movie is, the saddest thing in life is wasted talent. And unfortunately, watching AD, the saddest thing is watching AD play basketball because the dude is hyper-talented, but for whatever reason, we don't talk about him like we do Giannis. Giannis is not as talented as AD. Giannis can't hit a jump shot consistently to save his life. But somehow, Giannis has taken the crown as a top four in the league. No way. That should be AD's spot, man. He's more gifted. And when he puts his mind to it, he shows you how great he is. But unfortunately, he doesn't put his mind to it all the time. So he has games like he did against Denver where he goes scoreless for extended period of time. And Shaq always talks about, as big men, you can get like 10 points a game just busting your ass and running to the front of the rim and getting dunks and layups. So no way AD should be able to play against Denver, especially knowing how good they are defensively in a half court, and not score for a whole quarter or however long it was. And one rebound to boot. It shouldn't happen. You're too talented for that, bro. I'm just a regular dude, man. I'm just a guy with a mic. But I just want to see this guy maximize his talent before it's too late, man. It's just so crazy. Like, to me, like, watching AD, right, is one of the saddest things. Like, I remember when Derrick Rose got hurt as a Bulls fan. Like, that was one sad of a day, man. Like, probably one of the saddest days of my life. And watching AD is like just sadness all the time, because you know his potential, but he doesn't go all out every time. So with him, it's always a caveat. If he's healthy, okay, fine. We can't control that. When he wants to. You never say that about Giannis. You never say that about Joker, man, when they want to, because they're always going hard 100% all the time. And if AD can get to that point, if AD can get to that point where he's going hard all the time consistently, no doubt about it, yeah, the Lakers are challengers, 100%. They can beat anybody. But if not, if they're expecting Bron to be that guy, the ace, the backpacker, nah, man, he's too old for that. So because of that, I don't think the Lakers are a real threat, man. They'll make the playoffs. Might win a series. But when we talk about the true challengers, unless they make a couple trades or things truly change with AD, that's just what they are, man. Just a good team, and against the better teams, they're going to get bounced out. Definitely against Denver. For sure. Because Denver has answers for this version of Bron. That's another thing, right? Teams have an answer for this version of LeBron. 38-year-old LeBron, they have an answer for that. They may not shut him down, but Aaron Gordon is a pretty good answer for this version of LeBron. Aaron Gordon has no answers for Miami and second go around Cleveland LeBron. That's a totally different animal. And that's why when you get caught up in stats and things like that, you miss it, right? You miss the big picture. LeBron is still putting up stats. And some of those stats are better than Cleveland LeBron and Miami LeBron. But he's not back. He can't backpack no more for a 7-game series, right? Miami Cleveland LeBron is, okay, AD, you don't want to score? Okay, fine. I'm going to score 51, grab 13 boards, drop 11 assists. Right? And we're going to win this game. That was Miami Bron. That was second time around Cleveland Bron, okay? That's what I mean by backpack. Like, okay, AD, you don't want to take over? Fine, I'll take over. I'll do everything. I'll score, I'll rebound, I'll pass. I'll do everything. Bron can't do that no more consistently for 7 games. Sorry, man. My guy is old. And that's totally understandable. So, yeah. Some teams now have an answer for this version of LeBron, which makes it so that Anthony Davis has to take over, has to carry. And right now he hasn't proven that he wants to do that consistently. So we'll see how that plays out. But for now, I'm jumping off the Lakers bandwagon. I don't think they're a threat. On the other hand, I predicted that the Suns will be a contender, and I don't know if they really are. And that's because they haven't been healthy. And that's the problem. Because I don't know if the Suns will be healthy. I forgot how bad it's been with Bradley Beal the last couple of years. The brother can't stay healthy for nothing. So right now, the Suns are KD and Booker dependent, which is fine. Regular season, they can get away with some wins doing that. I still think they need a true point guard. Late game execution still looks sus, right? They still just got to give it to Book and hope he creates. He's a scorer. He can do that most of the time. KD is a scorer. He can do that most of the time. But then they don't have a true facilitator. And that might, as I've said before, come back to bite them in the playoffs. But if they're not healthy, if Beal isn't healthy, like all three of them aren't healthy, forget the playoffs no matter what. All right? True point guard or not. If Bradley Beal's not healthy, forget about it. They're not true contenders. I mean, I had to look this thing up. Bradley Beal has barely played half the games in the last couple of years. I didn't know it was that bad. I forgot how injured he's been. So the Suns better hope Brad gets healthy, man. And I do too, because I want to see how it works. And I think they can score a lot of points and look great doing it. They all got deep range. They all can shoot the middie. Like, these guys are true scorers, all three of them. But if they're not healthy, forget about it. So that Suns pick I had of them being contenders to the Nuggets, kind of dicey right now, y'all. Iffy. Because I don't know if they're going to be healthy. And if they're not healthy, forget about it. All right? I reserve the right. I reserve the right if they're not healthy to change my mind, for sure. So here's really what's the big deal with the NBA, all right? Y'all know what time it is. Who's taking over? Wemby. Victor Wembanyama. And this kid is sick. All right? I know I had my doubts about him coming in. This guy is amazing. And amazing in a sense that the way he's grasped basketball. He's a basketball player, y'all. He's averaging like close to 20 or whatever now, right? His scoring average is going up, 7-8 rebounds. Obviously, it's only been a couple games, so average is going to fluctuate. But when you watch this cat play, man, it's ridiculous. It looks like he can guard three people at the same time. Like, he's guarding the paint, he's guarding the top of the key, he's guarding the wing with his long-ass arms. It's like one step to block the three-point line, one step to block the three-point line in the top of the key, one step to block the three-point line corner, and he's already blocked off the paint. So he's guarding three dudes by himself. He shrinks the court, and he creates bad – he forces you to have bad spacing, all right? So Wemby on defense forces you to have bad spacing. So in the league where – everything is about spacing and corner threes and this and that. He forces you to have bad spacing because he eats it all up by himself. Long-ass arms, long-ass strides. He's quick. He gets out the shots. Earlier this season, he challenged. Like, I feel like he was, like, way in the corner, but he's able to challenge a shot that Kyrie was taking, you know, at the elbow, like, and block the shot. It's amazing. And his intelligence is amazing. Using his height on defense is amazing. He's a true basketball player. And aside, parentheses, Shaq got a lot of flack, a lot of heat for comparing Wemby to Bol Bol. And he really shouldn't have. If people took time to understand what he was saying, all Shaq was saying was that Bol Bol with the ball in his hands coming down the court looks like Wemby. Matter of fact, I would go as far to say, coming down the court, ball in his hands, Bol Bol looks better than Wemby. He looks more fluid, right? Bol Bol, if you say, hey, man, here's a ball, go get me a bucket, come down the court, top of the key, wing, Bol Bol can get you a bucket. Like, he is what I would call a hooper, right? A pure hooper. That's Bol Bol. Give me the ball, I can go get you a shot, right? He got the handles, the body control, the spin moves. Like, Bol Bol is a hooper in the truest sense of the word. Give me the ball. I'm going to come down court, cross over. Like, he does things that guys his height shouldn't do, just like Wemby. And that's all Shaq was saying. Shaq was just saying, hey, man, they look alike. Bol Bol could do some of the same things that Wemby does. And I think he looks better than Wemby doing some of those things. Like, his handles, I think, are better than Wemby's right now. He looks more fluid. Right? Right to left, left to right crossover. He looks very fluid as a scorer, as a pure hooper. Bol Bol looks just as good, if not better, than Wemby. And that's all Shaq was saying. Unfortunately for Bol Bol, that's really where it ends. He's just a hooper. Right? And maybe that's because he doesn't have the right coaching. He wasn't given the right the opportunities like Wemby has been. But for him, he's just a hooper. give me the ball, top of the key. I can mix this dude up. I'm a cross him over. Like, I'm gonna shoot this tray ball in his face. I'm gonna go dunk on him. Like, he got a Hooper's package for sure. He got a bag. But that's where it ends with him. But with Wemby, this dude is a Hooper. He can give you buckets, and he's a basketball player. His IQ is off the charts. He knows body positioning. He's not afraid of contact. He's not afraid and wants to play defense. He understands passing and passing lanes. Like, this dude's advanced. Like, he's a basketball player. So some guys are just Hoopers. Some guys are basketball players. Wemby is both. And that's what makes him so incredible, man. Now I see why this guy was so hyped. This guy is amazing because he does things at 7 feet four, whatever he is. People say he's 7 feet five, 7 feet, whatever he is, that guys his size should be able to do. He can handle, he can be a Hooper, and he has the IQ of a basketball player, meaning he makes smart plays, smart passes, smart defense, understands positioning. He does all that stuff to win basketball games. Uses his height. Like, I watched Booker try to give him like a shoulder in his chest or something like that when they played the Suns. He didn't even do nothing. Like, he's tough. He's ready for the challenge. He knows dudes are going to try to pick on him because of his size. And he's ready for that. He's ready to step to the plate. So this guy is going to be amazing. He already is amazing. He's going to get even better. I hope, Pop, if you're listening, I hope that you force him in the paint, though. I hope that you don't let him just rely on his jump shot, as good as it is and it's going to get. Height is still the biggest mismatch in basketball. Height is still the most important thing in basketball. And at 7'4" around the basket, nobody can stop him. The lobs that he can catch, like, ain't nobody getting to those lobs at the top of the square like that, man. So easily. And his arm is, like, he's not even fully extended, but he's able to catch a lob at the top of the square. So, Coach Pop, please make sure this guy, man, I don't know who he has to work with, make sure he develops a post game, gets a little bit stronger so dudes can't move him, so he can take advantage of his size. What I would hate is that he wastes his height just crossing dudes up and shooting J's. And I know that's not going to happen because Pop is a good coach, but I really want them to emphasize, like, yo, at 7'4", ain't nobody stopping you down there, man. Catch the ball in the paint, turn around, and literally dunk on them all day. But this gets the truth, man. But I do want to say, right? I do want to say this. In all seriousness, he's nice. He's going to be great. Potential is off the charts. Let's stop overhyping him. People are saying, you know, oh, you know, his floor is KG. Do people forget KG? Do people forget prime Kevin Garnett? Saying somebody's floor is Kevin Garnett, that's unheard of. And we did this with Bron, and fortunately for us, Bron was able to live up to the hype. But prime KG is, ooh, that's an animal, man. So to say that his floor is KG, KG was so tall, he's so quick, so bouncy, like, whew. I love Victor, man. I love Vic. I love what I'm seeing out of this kid, but please, let's slow down with the KG is his floor talk, all right? Let's just slow down. Like KG was a baller, okay? Please, let's relax. Let's relax. He's going to be better than Tim Duncan, and let's relax. The guy's going to be great. Let him figure out his own career. But saying that, basically making it sound like this guy's going to be a bust if he's not prime KG. Well, prime KG is one of the top 25, 30 cats to ever play in the NBA. Come on now. Come on. Let's be for real. Vic would take that career any day, and so would the rest of us watching that. So please, let's slow the hell down. Again, I just hope he fills out a little bit. Not fat, but fills out his man straight and get his butt in the paint. The man competes. He loves to compete. He ain't backing down. Dude's trying to bump him off. Now, he ain't trying to back down like that. Yeah, he's going to be a problem. He finna be a problem. And that leads me to my next point. Is the NBA rigged? Even just a little bit? Is the NBA rigged even just a little bit, y'all? I know we talked about the NBA being rigged. Fans talk about whenever their team loses, especially when their team loses to LeBron, right? Or the NBA is rigged for LeBron. Right. We've heard that. Now we know Andre Iguodala, you know, I forget whose podcast he was on, talked about the fact that, you know, JJ's Reddick's podcast, I think it was, and Andre Iguodala talking about, yeah, in a game seven, and you're playing against LeBron's team, you got to blow him out because the ref's calls are going to keep him in the game. So you got to beat LeBron by 15, 20 points to win by three. That's what Iggy was saying. And so in that sense, it makes you as a fan feel that, is the NBA kind of rigged? It's not rigged in the sense that they micromanage the scores and the outcomes, but when somebody says that, you're like, is the NBA kind of rigged? But then when you see Wimby go to San Antonio, it's like, is the NBA kind of rigged? Is the NBA draft rigged? Seriously, all the teams in the draft, San Antonio? Why San Antonio? Well, Pop has already worked with foreign players, Europeans, and their Hall of Famers. He worked with big men, Tim Duncan. So now they got a big man, and he's a European. So it would behoove the league for him to go to San Antonio. I'm not saying. I'm just saying, bro. Is the NBA a little rigged? Like, seriously. Pop was done on his way out. Pop is talking about he can't coach this kind of ball no more. Talking about the NBA has turned into a circus. Watch some of Pop's interviews from the last couple of years, man. Pop was done with the game. Pop was ready to go. Pop was like, this joint is a circus. Might as well have a four-point line. Pop was done. All of a sudden, Wimby's coming. Oh, yeah, Pop, you want to get Wendy? Sure. Why not? Why not? And all of a sudden, he's happy again. Funny how that works. You can't tell me, dog. You can't tell me that the Spurs just naturally won this damn NBA draft lottery to get Wimby, man. I'm sorry. So, yeah, the NBA is rigged. We don't want to hear it, but it has to be. Just like the NBA was rigged when the hometown kid from Chicago, Derrick Rose, somehow the Bulls with, like, the worst chance to win the lottery, won the lottery to get D. Rose, a Chicago kid. I'm a Bulls fan. I'm not going to act stupid. Bulls shouldn't have got that first pick. It's about the cash, man. Straight cash, homie. And D. Rose got hurt probably because, you know, he played too many minutes and all that. I don't want to blame Tiz. But guess what? The NBA is like, nah, we're not going to let nobody ruin Wimby. We got to give him to Pop. So Pop gets it. Pop gets to play with Wimby, man. Just like Bron, hometown kid, Cleveland is not Akron, but close enough, goes to Cleveland first pick. It is what it is, NBA. You have to come out and say it, but those of us with eyes, we can see. Hey, don't come after me, NBA. I'm just joking. I'm just joking, NBA. All right? I'm just joking. If you're hearing me, I'm just joking. All right? Now, but seriously, come on, y'all. How does that happen? How? Hey, but it works out, though. Can you imagine? Can you imagine Wimby playing for Thibodeau? Tibbs? This guy, his knees would fall off after, like, the first week of the season because he plays great offense and defense. Tibbs would have him playing 48 minutes a night. Playing some Joakim Noah Luol Deng numbers. No way the league would allow Wimby to go play for the Knicks. Not as long as Tibbs is there. You ain't fooling me. So, yeah, go to Pop. He knows how to manage minutes. He knows how to deal with big Europeans. Turn them into Hall of Famers. This guy is money bags for the next 15 years for the NBA, man. You think they would risk him going to a team with a coach in an organization that sucks, that's suspect? No way. And I don't blame him. Got to protect the investment. Especially with LeBron about to leave, the league needs somebody to step into that slot, that LeBron slot, because right now there's really not anybody to fill that gap. There are some great players, but there is not a star that everyone gravitates to like LeBron. And the league is going to need somebody, and that guy right now is probably going to have to be Wemby, that everybody gravitates to. You have to watch because he's such a freak, a physical freak. As good as some of these players are, as good as Luka is, as good as Joker is, and Jason Tatum are, they're not physical freaks that Jordan was and that Kobe was and that LeBron is. They're not physical freaks. Wemby is a physical freak, and people are going to tune in to watch this guy for the next 10, 15 years, and the league could not risk that. That's just a fact. So, yeah, he goes to Pop. He goes to Pop. He has to. He had to. Can't risk this guy going to some coach, some organization who don't know what to do with him. No way. No way in hell. So, yeah, the NBA is just a little rigged, y'all, all right? They're not determining outcomes of finals like people want to say. But there's for sure, things happening in the background that's just a little suspect. Just a little bit. All right, let's keep moving. James Harden trade, I'm going to hold off, right? I'm going to hold off judgment. I'm not a big fan of it. I feel like you're going to move Westbrook to the fourth option. He's been having a solid season playing his role. I don't know if he can continue to play his role with Harden on the team, but I'm going to reserve judgment. The good thing about the trade is that the Clippers didn't have to give up a lot of picks, all right? Or any major pieces, I should say. So that's good. But I think Russ will suffer. But again, I'll hold off on that. I think it worked in Houston because it was just them two taking turns. I don't know how it's going to work with Kawhi and PG and Harden and Russ. Russ wasn't good with Bron because Bron holds the ball a lot, and Russ was just standing out there shooting threes or third option, fourth option. Didn't work. If that's the case then with the Clippers, it's not going to work. But I'm going to watch a few games, and I'm going to revisit this one, and we'll talk about that another time. But as of now, I'm not a big fan. All right? I'm not a big fan. All right, y'all. That was a lot, man. But it's a lot going on. NFL, NBA, it's a lot to talk about. I love it. But I'm going to leave it there. Again, I'll get back on that Clippers. I'll update y'all on that Clippers one. We'll see how it goes. Watch a few games. Let y'all know my thoughts on it. But I'm going to leave it there. Appreciate y'all watching once again, as always. Don't forget to like, subscribe, share. Tell your friends, neighbors, family. Having a good time over here talking about sports and the real stuff. But I'm going to catch you guys next time. Mike. Sports and the real shit. Peace. I'm going straight to the top. Just put the sack on the clock. I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the top.